Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. As we listen to the news and stay informed on current life events around the world, it is hard to stay positive or notice the good things that are happening all around us. With information at our fingertips, we can become so consumed with the social, political environment and traumatic events. This happens not only because we care about the issues, about war and the impact this is having on humans, but also because our brains are wired to look for risks or dangers. As human beings, we are programmed to focus on what could go wrong. You may have heard this piece of neuroscience referred to as our lizard brain. It is an evolutionary survival strategy that would have been extremely beneficial to our survival as humans back in the day. What I want to share with you in this episode is that our automatic, overfunctioning response is not always working well for us, and it's sabotaging our ability to feel more joy, or at minimum, more peace. In the field of neuroscience, there is great evidence that we can create new pathways and reprogram our brains to respond differently at any age. What a relief! As we wrap up another year, I felt it was time to share some of the evidence-based practices that can move you towards a greater sense of well-being. Because when we're faced with adversity, I want you to be able to trust that you are already equipped and ready to respond from a place of wisdom and to be able to bounce back even stronger than before. That is why I like to offer you evidence-based strategies. They're tried and true. The What Going Well practice stems from Dr. Martin Seligman's work in the field of positive psychology. Whether you recognize it or not, there's always something going well. You just need to look for it. I see this as an expanded practice of gratitude. In looking for the things that went well, we are overriding that lizard brain. I've been diving into Greg Bell's book called What is Going Well, and he suggests that this is the question that changes everything. Let me tell you a little bit about our confirmation bias. Here is a little experiment you can try. The next time you are traveling around, even just downtown or around your neighborhood, I want you to look for all things red. I want you to notice only the red cars or any other item that stands out, like signs, people's clothing. After a short time, I want you to close your eyes and reflect on the other colors you noticed. Can you remember what else you saw? Or did these other colors become less obvious and noticeable? This is your confirmation bias. You will notice what you look for. So how do we decide what to focus on? Given that we no longer live in a time where we have to be concerned with a saber-toothed tiger jumping out of the bushes, we can, with practice, override this initial response, learn to see the positives, and notice what is going well every day. Now, this is not a one-and-done type of invitation, but as someone who loves to recognize possibilities, this is beautiful news. In fact, we are infinitely able to rewire our brains right up until we die. So you know what that means? No excuses. I like to think of this tool as updating a previous system that is no longer serving us as effectively as it could be. Think of it as version 2.0. And your programming is just going to take some time to update. And we can upgrade for free, unlike that new iPhone you have your eye on. In fact, it might even be helpful to ask yourself, how do I feel when I am constantly worrying about what could happen, such as getting work done before the deadline, or that the car might break down on your road trip, or if your daughter's going to be okay living in Nairobi? Oh, right, that's a little bit more specific to me. I want to honor that this part of you might feel like a familiar friend that has tried to help you, to protect you, or maybe anticipate possible landmines. So you might actually notice as you practice this that you will have some resistance to letting go of these responses that you have trusted for so long. I get it. Think of it this way. How many times have you worried needlessly? In other words, how many times has anxiety lied to you? And if I lied to you as many times as your worry has, would you believe anything I said? In the words of Greg Bell, if worry worked, there would be no problems. Let that just sink in for a minute. I like to imagine that you have developed all kinds of coping skills over the years. Many of them are healthy and very adaptive. And if you are constantly stressed, quick to react to new things, or often fearful of what could happen, it just might be time to assess whether this is serving you. Are you ready to see yourself in the driver's seat rather than let fear continue driving the bus? This is the invitation. If you want more moments of joy or to feel more peace on a regular basis, I encourage you to give this a try. I really love sharing this approach with clients as it does offer hope. At a time when people are burning out, suffering from anxiety, depression, and exhaustion, I really want to offer you a lifeline. When working with clients consumed with their stress, I just imagine them feeling trapped, cornered. And many of them actually say that, I feel trapped, with few perceived options available to them. In our work together, we begin creating doors, possibilities to be explored, and a roadmap, if you will, through those challenges. At the same time, blowing up old patterns that no longer serve them. Of course, there is a reason we use the term practice. If you're going to create some new pathways in your brain, you will need to stop using the old pathway as often, and with regular use, that new one will be really familiar. The more you use it, the easier it will become. For example, when you first learned to ride a bike, you had to think about your balance, steering, and remembering to keep pedaling. When you hop on a bike today, you don't have to think about it. That's because it is a pathway that is now well established, and you don't have to work so hard in accessing the information you needed. You just trust it. We become habituated to our circumstances, which makes it difficult to see it from a different lens. In the words of Albert Einstein, the fish is the last to know about water. So mindset is everything. To add an additional challenge to this invitation, I really want you to consider looking for the gifts, even in the most challenging of moments. Many people have a gratitude practice, but can we see the good even when we are in those hardest moments? One of my guests, Tim Ringgold, spoke of a long-standing gratitude practice he relied on every night. This was well established. On the day that his daughter Bella passed away, he knelt at his bed and did his gratitude practice. He was able to notice how the medical staff were able to learn from her unique disorder so they could help others. He could express gratitude for those who truly cared for her, or even for the fact that his song that he had for Bella came on the playlist in the moments before she passed. I'm not saying this is going to be easy, my friends, but when we can look for these elements that are going well at a time when we might be in a dark place, it allows us to ease through the challenges and find what is serving us in that moment. It's hard to compare to something like Tim Ringgold went through, but recently, I've been struggling with an injured knee for a little over a year, and I haven't been able to run. Running is one of those things that just helps me stay sane. I suffered with it for months. It was swollen, even when I wasn't even that active. I resigned myself to no longer being a runner. Even though I was still working out and adapted what I could, I was grieving for the freedom of running outside. I watched other runners with envy. I began to see myself as old and limited in what I thought I was capable of doing. One day, knowing I didn't want to live with a swollen knee for the rest of my life, I looked into physiotherapy. This is where I learned what my body needed. With the help of IMS treatments, acupuncture, lots and lots of exercises for legs, and rediscovering the value of stretching, not to mention this amazing physiotherapist, I discovered hope. At first, I didn't believe him when he suggested it wasn't a matter of if, but when I would run again. Since investing in these treatments and specific exercises, I now understand my body so much better. Without this injury, I would have continued to take my body for granted. I would have pushed it and not adapted to what it needed in order to maintain running as I enjoyed. I also could have continued with the belief that I was getting older and needed to accept this new, broken version of myself. I can now see this injury as a gift. Believe me when I say mindset really is everything. I didn't always think this way. It has been a practice developed over time. And like physio, when you discover something that works, you are more likely to continue with it. It might even be helpful to think of this as a competition between positive and negative. Which one will win? You get to decide. That's the power of your mind. Another example that happened recently is finding out that we had a resident mouse in the house. Unsure how many, but we know one for sure. I'm someone who likes to have a healthy pantry with lots of supplies on hand. The mouse really appreciated this too, as it had been nibbling into several bags of staples in the pantry. And of course, with that come several droppings, all in my pottery dishes and extra bedding in the closet. Of course, we discovered this fact just prior to my husband leaving on a trip for almost 2 weeks. Now, I can do a lot of brave things and can talk myself into doing a lot of scary things, but emptying mouse traps just isn't one of them. At first, I thought it was just in the pantry, but a couple days later, found evidence of a nest in one of the bedroom closets. Although we set traps, I took it upon myself to get some of those sonic plug-in devices that deter rodents from that area. In fact, I bought one for every room. I wasn't taking any chances. The point to the story is that once my initial response eased, I could see the gift in this scenario. I have now thoroughly cleaned out and purged several items from the pantry, securely stored food in containers, and tackled so many closets just in case. Sometimes it takes getting uncomfortable with something before we identify what is important to us. Unless we are motivated by a timeline or catalyst of this nature, I likely would not have made it a priority to tackle those areas of our house, which initially felt like an intrusion into my space, is now reframed as a gift or a blessing. Awesome. We had a mouse. And I feel so much better having made some decisions about what to keep and what could be sold or donated. Deep breath and feeling much lighter. Sometimes just asking yourself, what do you have control over in this moment, can bring clarity and a sense of well-being, because there is always something you have control over. Beginning with your response to the situation and expanding out from there. If we shift our mindset or what we focus on even slightly, it is possible to find these kinds of moments in day-to-day life. In fact, that's why I wanted to share some really simple, lighter examples that weren't as threatening. In his book, Greg Bell also identifies another element for us to consider. Those of you who tend to be hard on yourself are also more inclined to be hard on others. That's because we are using the what is going wrong mindset. If this resonates with you, you might recall how irritated you become when someone does things differently or not as you expected. Notice how often you are judging people around you. What do you think you're focusing on in those moments? Are you focusing on what is going well? To this point, if you are a leader of a team, I would recommend adding this practice to your team meetings. Some teams I work with as a coach are so busy putting out fires, they seldom stop to identify what is going well. Once they started sharing stories of success, vulnerable areas of growth in their role as a manager, or small wins, they are encouraged by the connection they make with one another and the positive work they are doing in the community. In the same way I'm encouraging you to focus on the good in yourself or your life, you can find the good in others. As Brené Brown would suggest, if we just approach these situations with the belief that we are all trying our best, it can shift our judgment. It can shift our expectations of others. Instead of quickly judging someone for a mistake, we can stay curious. What else might be going on for that person? What are they doing? Here is the good news. In focusing on what went well or what is going well, we can reduce our suffering. That nagging, heavy feeling you get when you're focused on the challenges or negative events all around you. Anyone else want to reduce their suffering? Instead of heading down that negative path and noticing all the difficult things, you have the option of choosing a different path. You get to decide which one to travel on. As I mentioned earlier, each of these moments are promoting new neural pathways. The more you practice, the easier it gets. I'd also like to share a cool example that our daughter recently had this summer. A few months ago, she was traveling back to Nairobi from Canada and experienced several flight cancellations, delays, and lost luggage. Now, traveling from Canada to Nairobi is not for the faint of heart to begin with. At minimum, 22 hours of travel, assuming all goes well. I suspect there were several moments of frustration and disappointment, which is natural. When we had a chance to catch up early into these adversities, she had already found a reframe for her experience. In fact, I remember it being less than 24 hours. She focused on the fact that she was put up in a hotel with meal vouchers, had a really meaningful chat with a Syrian Uber driver who was an immigrant to Canada, and learned how grateful he is just to be living in Canada and for the opportunity that he's been given. That same night, she had a rich conversation with one of the hotel staff serving her at dinner. Even the simple things like a good coffee the next morning to start her day made all the difference. We may not be able to change the circumstances, but we can decide which part of the experience we focus on. So many of my guests on the podcast have suggested that they have learned a great deal about themselves through some of their hardest days. And in many cases, they are grateful that they have gone through that experience. Maybe it's in recognizing that we have a lot of people and community around us that care about us, or maybe that they've learned to ask for help, set boundaries, and stick to them. One of the quotes I love from Greg Bell's book is that we can't make things better until we stop making them worse. He suggests our natural tendency to obsess about what is going wrong is like digging a hole deeper and deeper. And we know how that works, right? So part of this equation is letting go of patterns that no longer serve you and try something different. I personally can't think of any risks associated with this approach. Even in the most persistent and uncomfortable challenges, we can stop digging. What I'm suggesting here is that you are learning to trust yourself and not the antiquated wiring we defer to in our brains. So let's talk about the happiness set point just for a moment. Believe it or not, as humans, we tend to have a natural happiness set point. This is a range in which we have learned to be comfortable. We will have moments, days, when we might stretch outside the upper limit of that set point. But after that event is over, we quickly return to the range in which we are most familiar. The same goes for the lower end of our window. If something really terrible happens, we have the ability to eventually return to the familiar set point. In Brianna Weiss's book, 101 Essays That Will Change the Way You Think, she suggests people do not want to believe happiness is a choice, because then the responsibility is in our hands. We can complain all we want, but no one is going to make our lives better. Only we can. We unconsciously begin to sabotage our happiness if we extend past our upper limit for too long. Take a moment to think about this. What are the subtle ways you may have taken your foot off the pedal when you were so close to achieving that dream you've had? What are the deterrents that got in your way that became excuses rather than legitimate obstacles? So here is part of the invitation. When you take a few minutes to pause and really allow yourself to imagine arriving at your goal, what comes to mind? Notice if there's some worry that creeps in, like, what will my family think if I pursue that opportunity? What parts of you become uncomfortable as you imagine the life and happiness you desire? When we are developing new patterns and expanding our experiences to allow for our well-being, we need to consider possible roadblocks that can get in the way. I want to encourage you that it is possible to move the parameters of your happiness set point, and it's going to take intention and effort on your part. If you are experiencing significant loss, trauma, or a major crisis in your life, I want to be sure to leave space for grief and to honor the value of time and healing. The ideas shared in this episode are not meant to replace the benefit of talking to someone like a counselor, but it will assist in your desire to move through it and many other moments effectively. Here are just a couple of exercises I'd like to leave you with on your journey to discovering what is going well. First of all, plan a day when you can carry a notepad around with you. Notice how many times your mind naturally goes to what is going wrong. If it is too difficult to do this for a whole day, try doing it for an hour or begin with maybe two. Then, as you commit to tracking what is going well, I would love for you to re-measure how many times in a day you notice the negative events. I would suggest maybe 3 months or 6 months down the road from the first day you did your study. Second of all, think of this like the autocorrect on your phone when you're texting. We just make the adjustments to what we want it to say. What if we could create that kind of awareness in our mindset throughout the day? And lastly, as you take the driver's seat and no longer rely on your lizard brain to guide you, what evidence would you look for in the days and weeks to come? How will you capture this learning to ensure that you really do develop those neural pathways for good? As we wrap up this episode, I would love to hear from you. What worked? What did you notice? Be patient and kind to yourself, because this is going to help you remain open. If you are enjoying this podcast, I would love it if you would rate and comment on your preferred podcast platform. And remember, friends, adversity is inevitable while resilience is a practice. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.